Hey there, Rick Singeri of Vermont Edition. Just want you to know this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The conversation about who can obtain an abortion and under what circumstances is heating up around the country. As some states pass laws to essentially outlaw abortion or to severely restrict it based on how far along a person is in their pregnancy, Vermont and some other states are going in the other direction, aiming to codify reproductive rights through legislation, and even in Vermont's case, through a constitutional amendment. Governor Phil Scott has a bill awaiting his signature right now that would create a legal framework preventing restrictions on abortion. He has until tomorrow to sign it, but has already said that he will not prevent it from going into law, whether he signs it or not. In other words, he won't veto it. The legislature also began the process of trying to amend the state constitution to enshrine legal reproductive rights without restriction. This is a process that will take several years. Last week, Vermont Attorney General T.J. Dunneman and Chittenden County State's Attorney Sarah George joined 40 other elected prosecutors around the country, including some in Alabama and Georgia, in saying they will not prosecute people who endeavor to get an abortion, nor health officials who perform them. State's Attorney George wrote on Twitter, "I'm incredibly grateful to live in a state that is unlikely to force this choice, but I was happy to stand with my counterparts around the country who may be." Today on the show, we're going to talk about Vermont's moves in the context of a national debate that appears headed to the Supreme Court about the right to an abortion. Joining us are two of the lead sponsors of Vermont legislation. Becca Ballant is a Democratic state senator representing Windham County. She's one of the sponsors of Proposition 5, which is the first step in amending the Vermont Constitution to protect reproductive rights. Becca Ballant, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you so much.
And Maxine Grad is a Democratic state representative from Moortown. She and Representative Ann Pugh were the co-lead sponsors of H-57, a bill that would preserve the right to an abortion. That is the bill that's currently in front of the governor. Maxine Grad, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show as well.
Thank you.
So Vermont's laws currently have no restrictions on a person's right to obtain an abortion. So, Representative Grad, let me start with you. Why pass any new laws? Why was that necessary now?
Because as we see in so many other states, laws are changed and abortion rights are being threatened, as well as access to reproductive rights. And so it's important for Vermont to be clear so Vermonters know what their rights are and to preserve those very important rights.
Because why? Another governor or another legislature could come in and decide to change things for Vermont?
Absolutely. And also with the way the Supreme Court is going, that's also another threat.
But the way the Supreme Court is going, maybe you can explain a little bit your thinking on that, because at least what many people are thinking is that if the Supreme Court ruled on this, which it's unsure whether and which lawsuit it might take up, but if it did, it would likely not eliminate abortions across the country. It would be up to different states. So again, if Vermont has no restrictions on the books, why is what the Supreme Court is thinking right now something that concerns you?
Because I think it's important for Vermont to be proactive and not wait to see what the court does. And given that Vermont doesn't have any restrictions, any change in that, whether it be through the Supreme Court or through the legislature, would really be a detriment to individuals' access to health care.
So, Senator Ballant, one of the things that you have been doing is to work to make sure that even if there are laws on the books that prevent restrictions, that, again, does not then prevent another series of legislators from coming in and changing the laws. So why is a constitutional amendment something that is not only necessary in your view, but a wise decision, given that it will be really difficult to change that for future generations if they decide differently?
Well, I think one of the things that is important to understand in framing this argument is that it isn't unusual for us to amend our Constitution. So the way that we often talk about it in Vermont is that this is a rare occurrence, and it's actually not. We've attempted to amend our Constitution over 200 times, and of those 200 attempts, we've been able to amend it 28 times because there are moments in time when we feel like we must make a statement, an overarching statement of what our values are in Vermont and who we are as Vermonters. And we believe that it is time to reassert the principles of equality and personal liberty that all Vermonters have over their reproductive autonomy. And this is not just about a legal framework going forward. This is about saying that we trust Vermonters, we trust women, we trust families to be making these decisions for themselves, and it's not something that should be regulated at the state, that we should be trusting doctors and families together to be making these decisions.
We've got comments already, as you might imagine, lots of people weighing in on this as we try to think about, you know, how Vermonters think about this issue and what they want. Desiree in St. Albans writes, I have been passionate about women's rights since college when my best friend was raped and became pregnant as a result of her attack. It was a horrible time in her life where she considered many options, including suicide. I was able to accompany her while I witnessed Planned Parenthood care for her in such a compassionate way during the termination of her pregnancy, and I knew that day they had also saved her life. It's important to trust women with their own bodies and health care. I urge Governor Scott to sign H 57 to assure women of his commitment to protecting our rights. Sandy in Burlington says, I support gender equality, period. That means women must have the right to make their own decisions, including control of their reproductive systems. Otherwise, they are nothing more than potting soil for males in which to plant their seeds. If women are able to be entrusted with good, major, lifelong impacting decisions for children, then surely those same women are capable of making good decisions for themselves as well. I trust a woman to make decisions that are best for her without government interference. The same people that support politicians endangering the lives of women also say they support less government. How ironic. Apparently, they want government out of everything except a woman's reproductive system. And Paul in Richmond says, as a pediatrician and seeing the potential in every child, I find it deeply troubling that abortion is considered a, quote, solution to an unwanted healthy pregnancy conceived through consensual sexual relations. Especially in this day and age with widely available and very effective contraceptive methods, it is avoidable. Who knows what great minds are being snuffed out by this short-sighted practice? And what does the fact that this practice, without contingency, is to be officially enshrined in the Vermont State Constitution suggest about us as a society? Norman is on the line with us from Essex Junction. Hi, Norman.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks. Go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm an attorney in Vermont, a pro-life attorney in Essex Junction. I actually testified against the constitutional amendment. But if you look at this bill, I mean, it's extreme to the max. I mean, it prohibits the government from even regulating in any way the abortion process. It goes well beyond Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade says there is a compelling interest in protecting life in the third trimester. This bill is going to allow abortions until birth. And I think if you actually talked with most Vermonters, they would be very upset about that.
So, Norman, let me ask you, given that nothing in this bill changes what is already legal practice in the state of Vermont, why does this bill trouble you if it doesn't actually change the practice of abortions in Vermont as they're currently able to be performed?
Prevents the possibility of even regulating the abortion process in the future. And the bill is an extreme reaction to the possible overturning of Roe v. Wade, which is actually, I think, pretty unlikely. So, I mean, the existing law is the way it is. There is no regulation. But now we're going to say you can't regulate. You can't get involved.
So, Norman, let me put that to Representative Gratt. I hear your anger at the bill and why you don't like it. And you say you testified against it. So it's interesting to start seeing, you know, who came out in Montpelier to talk about the bill. But so, Representative Gratt, what about that? I know that the practice doesn't necessarily change. But Norman is saying this prevents the government from being able to even take any steps to regulate in certain situations.
So the practice and the law doesn't change, and I think it's as simple as that, and it preserves current existing fundamental rights, and it also exists the state's rights under the 10th Amendment, separate from Roe, to protect citizens' health and welfare. So really this doesn't do anything different.
Can you talk about the impact that people often worry about on third trimester abortions and what happens in practice from what you heard in testimony?
Is that to me? Representative
Grant? Yes.
Yes. So again, we heard that while there's concern, it's very rare. These are very tragic situations, and that the most important thing is to leave these very personal medical decisions to a patient and her healthcare provider.
So before we turn to Senator Ballant and talk a little bit more about the Proposition 5, can you, Representative Grad, just say what exactly does H-57 say?
It does codify the fundamental right to access to abortion and to reproductive services, and it does prohibit the government from interfering with the exercise of those rights.
Well, I think that the wording of it is also interesting because it doesn't just speak about the word abortion. I'll read a part of the legal wording in H-57. It says, the state of Vermont recognizes the fundamental right of every individual who becomes pregnant to choose to carry a pregnancy to term, to give birth to a child, or to have an abortion. So it recognizes the several different choices that a pregnant person may make in that situation, which is also interesting. It's not – I mean, it is an abortion bill, but it's not, in terms of semantics, simply an abortion bill.
That's right, and thank you for pointing that out.
1-800-639-2211 is our number if you have a perspective that you would like to share. Dan writes in to say, what role did the elevation of Gorsuch and Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court have in your decision to make H-57 and Prop 5 top priorities? Senator Ballant, what about for you? Is that what you're thinking about?
Absolutely. I don't think anyone who cares about women's rights in Vermont and specifically women's access to reproductive freedom could watch the appointments of Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and not be concerned. And to an earlier point that the earlier caller made, saying his argument saying that there's no indication that Roe v. Wade is in danger of being overturned, there are 20 cases currently pending at the Supreme Court. And although we don't know yet which, if any of those cases the court will take up, there is significant concern. And so this is not unfounded hysteria, which I have heard from opponents of our movements here in Vermont. This is about looking very soberly at the landscape across the country and realizing that we have to make a statement of our values.
When we had Governor Scott on the show recently, he said he was planning to let H-57 go into law with or without a signature. He wasn't going to veto it. And again, he has, I believe, until tomorrow to decide whether to sign it or just to let it go into law. And we reached out to his office today to see if there was any further information they could give on that. And a decision hasn't been made or hasn't been made public at this point. But he also told us that in some ways he wished that the constitutional amendment was the only piece of legislation moving forward, because he said, look, that would put it essentially to a vote of the people. Vermonters would be able to have their say to determine with their votes whether or not they liked this idea, whether or not it should be enshrined into the state constitution. And we'll get more into the process for amending the constitution. But Senator Ballant, what do you think about that idea that, you know, in some ways, although it takes longer, a constitutional amendment may be cleaner and it affords people to have that sort of direct democratic access to what they believe in this situation?
Well, I certainly understand the argument, and it, I know that that was a case that was made in the Senate as well, which is why we had such a strong vote coming out of the Senate, 28-2 in favor of the constitutional amendment going to the people for a vote. What I would say in terms of the governor's statement is he has said repeatedly that he stands with women and that he is pro-choice, that he is a pro-choice candidate, and he always has been. And I would just urge him to rethink his stance on hesitating on this, because somewhere between 1 in 3 and 1 in 4 women in Vermont are going to have an abortion in her lifetime. And it is many of us women and our friends and neighbors and colleagues and family members who are making this decision. And I think it's important for the governor to stand with those women and their families. The other thing that I would say is we know that a strong majority of Vermonters support reproductive rights. And I think it would be a wonderful show of support for the people who elected him to stand with the work that we've done on H-57 and on Prop 5.
Let's go to Julie, who's calling in from Colchester. Julie, hi. Go right ahead.
Hi there. Two things. One, I'm someone who survived an incredible medical trauma to myself, and as a result, I have been informed by my various doctors that if I were to get pregnant and try to carry a pregnancy to term, it could actually kill me. So I am one of those people that would be affected if I lived in a different state where this was a ban. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, when we elect politicians and elected officials like the folks on your show today, we elect them as 7 in 10 Americans do believe that it's not just women too, it's also members of the LGBTQ community that need abortion services and healthcare services. We elect them to represent our interests. So I would urge Governor Scott, just as the senator just mentioned, that to stand actually with his words and make his actions match his words, and don't be a coward and let this just pass through his desk. Champion it, sign it, protect all of Vermonters and what we choose to do with our own bodies. Thank you.
Julie, thanks for your call. I appreciate hearing from you. Piper writes in to say, I'm writing in with urgency to tell you why my reproductive rights are important to me. As a young person, my whole life is in limbo. I'm awaiting my degree, awaiting a career, awaiting a private personal life that has not yet been disclosed to me. Without my reproductive rights and the understanding that my body is my own, the years that I've put into preparation for this degree, career, and life are thrown to the wind. Knowing that an atrocity could be committed to me and I couldn't act in my own best interest afterwards, knowing that legislators don't know me but have my right to life, liberty, and happiness in their hands. My reproductive rights are as important to me as freedom is. But let's go to Sal, who's calling in from Bethel. Hi, Sal. Go right ahead.
Sure. I agree with abortion in certain circumstances when it comes to the woman's health, incest, or rape. I don't feel that abortion should be done as a form of birth control in this country. And I never hear anyone discuss what the percentages are of abortions when it comes to incest, rape, or just, hey, let's have an abortion because we didn't use birth control, I didn't pull out, or whatever the case may be. And I'm hoping to get an answer to that question, because I've never hear on any discussion when it comes to abortion in this country on what the ratio is between the three of them.
Well, Sal, let me ask you before we go to our guests, how would you, if you were making a law that said it can only be allowed under these certain circumstances, how would you enforce that law? Would you force a woman to go to a medical provider and then have to send to the government or to law enforcement some statement that says, this is why I am seeking an abortion? And for then a medical provider to also have to say, to sort of sign off on saying, I know I'm only providing an abortion to a person who has been raped, not to a person who didn't use contraception. I mean, how would you enforce that law if you started to make those kinds of restrictions based on why a person is pregnant?
Well, it's all about the money, obviously. And so hurting the pocketbook of the doctors who do things illegally and against the law, I think, would put an end to it.
But I'm not talking about that. I'm saying who would know, and how would you make someone know why a person is obtaining an abortion?
Well, if someone's raped, there's obviously a record of that, and incest, etc. There's going to be a record of that. And obviously there's a record of a woman's health concern, like the young lady that just called in, saying if she followed her pregnancy to term, it could kill her. I mean, there's a record of that. And I just feel that it's more about the money in this country than it actually is. I think they're using women's rights as an excuse.
Sal, I take your point, and I want to pass this on to our guests, because you were asking a specific question as well. But I will point out before we move on that, in fact, in many, many, many cases of rape and incest, there is no record. People frequently do not press charges. They may not have told anybody. And so the idea that there is going to be either a police record or some sort of medical record of incest or rape is actually just not true.
And but, Jane, yeah, this is Becca. If I could add, and they often happen within the context of families. Mm-hmm. Can we please bring that in as well? That is a reason why women do not feel comfortable coming forward. And I would urge the caller to look at a New York Times piece about a law in Alabama that actually gives legal standing to men who have raped, even if it's incest within their own family. So I urge him to do a little bit more reading.
So while we're talking about this, though, Senator Ballant, you know, one of the questions that Sal asks is just what is known about the reasons that someone might choose to have an abortion? And, you know, you're not required to state the reason on some legal form that would then be sent into, like, you know, census data. But what do we know anecdotally about the reasons that people choose and how frequent they are?
Jane, if I could, I just want to flip the question on its head. Right. I really do, because I want to say, do we ever ask men, have you ever used, you know, have you ever had unprotected sex in your lifetime? Have you ever had sex without contraception outside of a marriage? Have you ever had a condom break while you were having sexual relations with a woman? So why is it that the woman has to come forward and talk about what the circumstances were by which she became pregnant? So I take offense already with the question that the caller asked.
Even if it's the woman who then is seeking the medical procedure.
Well, the man can't seek the medical procedure, Jane.
Mm-hmm. Representative Brad, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah, and I appreciate what Senator Ballant said. Remember, these are all very personal health care decisions, and I trust persons to make their health care decisions appropriately without governmental intervention.
And so in terms of your determination and your moving forward on H-57, Representative Grad, it doesn't matter to you what the decision is or whether somebody is, as the caller said, you know, using this as birth control versus a situation where the life of the child or the mother is at risk.
Now, again, these are personal decisions, and it's not my place to make that judgment call.
More to come as we have this conversation, as we consider our beliefs here in Vermont and our beliefs as they then apply to our legal system and what we want our laws to say about our beliefs, about who we are, and about reproductive rights and the context of gender equality as well. Today we're talking about how Vermont's action on reproductive rights fits into the larger national picture. We're mostly talking right now about Vermont's actual legislative action, but of course, legislative action doesn't take place within a vacuum. It only exists because of what's happening in the world and what's happening in the wider world. And so we're looking at these two pieces of legislation as much of America grapples with the question of reproductive rights and access to abortion. We're talking with Maxine Grad, a Democratic state representative from Moortown and a lead sponsor of H-57, a bill that would preserve the right to an abortion that is expected to go into law within the next 24 hours or so. And at its passage, it will become law. There is no waiting period for this one to become law. Becca Ballant is a Democratic state senator representing Windham County. She's one of the sponsors of Proposition 5, which is the first step in amending the Vermont Constitution to protect reproductive rights. That process can take 3 to 5 years. Senator Ballant, I want to come back to you. I know you wanted to comment on what we were discussing.
Just one important point. I want to draw attention to the fact that many of the laws that are being, the more draconian laws that are being contemplated nationwide currently, are really dealing with a pregnancy up until 8 weeks. They're trying to restrict somebody's access to abortion up to 8 weeks. Many times women don't even know at that point that they are pregnant. And so earlier, I think I want to make sure that we don't get sloppy in our language and always refer to someone who is aborting a child. I heard you use child, fetus. Sometimes we're talking about as early, you know, several weeks into a pregnancy. You know, that is up for discussion whether we're going to be discussing that as a child or a fetus. But I just want to be clear that we're talking about letting women know that when they are trying to make this difficult decision within the context of their lives and their families, that we as Vermonters are going to stand behind them.
Yes. And if I used the word child, I don't think I did. But if I did, that was not a language choice that I would have made consciously. Because, yes, again, as you said, there are scientific terms that are, you know, especially in a debate where language becomes such a part of it, it's really important to use those terms carefully. And even the term fetus, which, as you said, is a term, a medical term that is at a certain point in a pregnancy, an embryo goes from an embryo to a fetus. So I apologize if I used that word. Certainly not one that I would have intended to use.
The other thing I wanted to ask Representative Grad, if she would speak a little bit too, because I know this has been a huge focus of the opponents, is the issue of how many third trimester abortions are contemplated in Vermont. I think that would be a really important piece to illustrate for the listeners.
Representative?
Right. So as I said before, very, very rare. And when they do happen, it's under very unusual and tragic circumstances.
You know, when we have had this conversation in the past on Vermont Edition, one of the things that comes up about third trimester abortions, though, is that, you know, there's no restriction on whether and how, you know, a person is deciding to terminate in the third trimester based on, you know, what the circumstances are for the fetus. And so, yes, usually, perhaps almost exclusively tragic circumstances, somebody who wanted to carry that pregnancy to term, but there is no restriction that requires a certain circumstance.
That's correct. And again, because these are medical decisions to be made between a patient and a healthcare provider.
Heidi in Calla says, I hope that Governor Scott will sign H-57 into law because I care about the lives of women and I realize the complexity of every individual's circumstances. As a volunteer greeter at Planned Parenthood, I personally witnessed a wide variety of patients, each with a different story and set of needs that I could never have guessed. I also witnessed, without judgment, the well-meaning but misled efforts of anti-abortion protesters to oversimplify the issue. I believe that our governor has a deeper understanding of people's lives, and I hope that he will sign the bill into law. Elizabeth in Jericho says, the question is less, does a woman want to be pregnant, than, if a woman is pregnant and must carry the child to term, who will raise the child? To all of the people who are calling to outlaw abortion, I ask, are you ready to raise the child of a woman who wanted an abortion? And Chloe White, policy director for the ACLU of Vermont, says ACLU of Vermont wants to thank Representative Grad, Senator Ballant, and all of the other legislators involved in advocating for H-57 and Prop 5. Living in a safe and healthy life is a basic right, as is the freedom to define our own path. When someone decides to have an abortion, it should be safe, affordable, and free from punishment or judgment. And that is exactly what Vermont values H-57 and Prop 5 affirm. And let's go to Donnie, who's calling in from Chelsea. Hi, Donnie.
Yes. Thank you, Senator. For a while back, you were talking to a man from Bethel, and I loved your response to it. And it kind of leads me into my somewhat of a Jonathan Swift thing. Possibly a mandatory vasectomy for men, Republican men. And putting the shoe on the other foot so that it is the responsibility of the men. And obviously you can have a vasectomy changed. But and I doubt that any men would really want to go for that, but maybe it's a good way to start.
All right, Donnie, you said it was a Jonathan Swiftian kind of suggestion, so I won't ask our guests to respond in terms of a real proposal that you're making there. But, you know, Donnie trying to turn the tables a little bit to make male people responsible for those actions. Jake is calling in from Burlington. Hi, Jake.
Hi there. Yeah, my comment was about specifically the people talking about incest or rape exception for pregnancies. And I think that really when you hear a conservative say that, they're giving away the game. You know, they're not interested in the life of the fetus. They're interested specifically in how the pregnancy started. It's never been about pro-life or anything like that. It's about slut shaming. That is the ultimate cause of the abortion argument. And the evidence for that is that Republicans are not storming en masse to provide free universal birth control for everyone who asks for it. If you do that on a Monday, by Tuesday, abortion goes down by 70%. But they're not doing that because it is now and always has been about slut shaming and making sure that women have consequences for having sex.
Jake, thanks for your thoughts and your perspective on that. I know that many people who are opposed to abortion would really take issue with the way that you frame that as all people who are opposed to abortions. But, you know, I hear the energy and emotion in your voice with that. John's calling in from Brattleboro. We'll take another call here from John. Hi, go right ahead.
Hi. I'm sort of surprised that the issue at hand is never talked about, which is Roe v. Wade was a decision of the U.S. Supreme Court that ruled due process clause of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution provided fundamental right to privacy, and that protects a pregnant woman's liberty to choose.
And so, John, what you're saying is what, that should be discussed more? I mean, I think that's part of what Representative Grad has been saying, but you think that the debate gets lost somewhere beyond that?
I think it gets very lost. We're talking about protecting the Constitution and making it a issue that has to do with all members of the United States' rights.
Yeah. So, John, let me pose that to Representative Gratt. I mean, it seems to me that that's part of what you've been saying is this is a private conversation between a woman and her doctor, or a person who's pregnant and their doctor.
True. And thank you. It is true that Roe v. Wade did articulate the fundamental right to privacy. And yeah, it is certainly a key part of the conversation.
So assuming that H-57 passes into law with or without the governor's signature by tomorrow, it goes into law. These are codified. But Senator Ballant, can you just refresh us on the process for a constitutional amendment? Because that does take quite a bit of time.
That's right. So the first thing folks should know is that proposals of amendment can be initiated every 4 years, and they start in the Senate. And a proposal has to be approved by two-thirds of the Senate. And what's different about that as opposed to a regular vote on a bill is regardless of how many people are in the chamber on that particular day, it is still two-thirds of the Senate as a whole. So we needed at least 20 votes. We had 28 on our floor vote, which was on April 5th. Once it passes the Senate, goes to the House, where it is taken up. They also had a very strong vote in the House on our particular amendment. They voted 106-38, and that passed on May 7th. And then what will happen is next biennium's legislature also must weigh in on it. That is only on a majority vote in both chambers. And then at that point, it goes to Vermonters writ large to be able to weigh in on it. And so the process can take between 3 and 5 years. And, of course, that's a long time for us to be having really important conversations with our friends and neighbors and family members about this.
And because changing the Constitution is a big deal, I mean, that's part of the reason why it requires a new class of senators and representatives to be able to weigh in, partly so that Vermonters could vote depending on their beliefs on that constitutional amendment. And then, as you said, a majority of Vermonters would need to support the proposal before the amendment is made to the Vermont Constitution. Senator Ballant, what role do you see Vermont playing in this national conversation? I mean, the changes that we're making would be state changes. They are in the context of federal and national conversations. But do you see Vermont playing a role beyond, you know, what we sort of put into law within the borders of our own state?
Absolutely. I have heard from friends across this country, friends who are living in Indiana, friends who are living in Alabama, folks who feel like Vermont is showing a different way of treating women not as things but as full human beings with the ability to make decisions about their own autonomy. And so I'm often very skeptical about arguments that say, you know, Vermont is leading the nation because we're very small. And I will say my wife's from Wyoming, and sometimes when I go out to Wyoming, people will literally say to me, Vermont, I forgot that was a state. And so I am very sensitive to the fact that we sometimes have a larger sense of our worth here. But in this instance, I think so many people have been so heartbroken. So many women and their partners across the nation have been so heartbroken about what's been happening in these Republican-controlled legislatures that Vermont is showing another way forward. I'm very proud of that.
And Representative Gratt, what do you think?
Yeah, I can't agree more. And I, too, have heard from many friends and family all over the country. And I do think that Vermont gives folks hope and that we are taking the lead in a very significant and meaningful way.
Maxine Gratt is a Democratic state representative from Moortown. She and Representative Ann Pugh were the co-lead sponsors of H-57, a bill that would preserve the right to an abortion. It's widely expected to go into law in the next day or so. Becca Ballant is a Democratic state senator representing Windham County. She's one of the sponsors of Proposition 5, which is the first step in amending the Vermont Constitution to protect reproductive rights. Thanks very much to both of you for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.